Good afternoon and welcome to this edition of Radio Linguistica. In DGT we have Translating Europe, as you know, therefore I chose the title Translating World. In fact, our topic today is translating in world institutions like the World Trade Organization and the United Nations. I'm glad to welcome here two ex-colleagues from DGT, Josep Bonnet, now in Geneva, World Trade Organization, and Seger Bonnebacker, working for the United Nations in New York. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Both of you have, of course, a profound knowledge of how we are working in DGT, so you can compare easily. Well, let's figure out, and an acquaintance asks you on the fly, what's the difference between your old and your new working place? Just a flashlight.
Josep, you want to go first?
Okay, thank you very much. You know, soon after I arrived to Geneva, I went back to Brussels to attend a Translating Europe forum. And I met a number of colleagues and they told me, how's life there? And I said, I'm trying to bring them into the 21st century. That was my first impression, that the way of working here and made me think a lot of the way we were working in the late 90s. And it was very nice. But I wanted to move them into what I knew from before I left. So I would say my first impression was, it was a big, like traveling into the past. And yours, Seger?
I found a very strange, almost contradictory situation for me, because coming from the European Commission, where you had more than 20 working languages, or official languages rather, I went to a place that has only 6. But at the same time, I entered a world with colleagues from around the globe rather than just from around Europe. And that made quite a difference for me. It really widened my horizons, both professionally and on a cultural plane.
Just a little question, Josep. You have the same languages, 6 languages, or less or more?
No. I think that Seger is fully multilingual. We have 3 languages, only English, French, and Spanish, which means that all our translators are from Europe except some South Americans. But we were born as the GATT. And we were converted into WTO only in the mid 90s. And at the time, neither China nor Russia were members of the GATT. So there was no need for Arabic or Chinese or Russian.
So neither the Arabs.
Well, the Arabs were there, but not all of them. And it was considered at the time that it was not needed.
Well, productivity is always a hot topic in any translation service. You know very well how it used to be in DGT. So let's compare a little bit. What is the approach in your service? Is more or less the same or completely different? Well, let's start again with Josep.
Thank you. I would say that the approach to productivity is different, and there's a main difference in my view, which is that in DGT, I never saw a benchmark, like a compulsory number of pages or words that you should translate during the day. It was assumed all the time that 5 pages a day and you could go home. I knew somebody incidentally that told me I can translate the 5 pages in the morning and the afternoon I can do whatever I want. But normally there was no such assumption. You had to translate as much as possible, and the targets that you got were bizarre, like you must translate more than the average, or you must translate more than past year. Whereas here, us in the UN, I think, we have a benchmark. So we are expected to translate 1,650 words up to the end of last year. I think that that was a change, and Sigurd will tell us. But this average, this benchmark, in my view, means that you, when you have a benchmark, you work towards the benchmark. Like when you have a deadline, you work towards the deadline. And this creates a difficult situation where you cannot have a conversation like, well, I think that you could do 1,900 words. Why? My benchmark is just 1,650. So I find it a bit bizarre. But how do you see it, Sigurd?
Well, I mean, I'm in editing, and the situation is a little different. But I also stress that I left the commission in 2014, so I don't know if the situation has evolved. Maybe Conrad can explain that to us. But we have benchmarks both in editing and translation, and in translation, it is now 5.6 pages a day. I think it's easier to speak in pages because that's also the norm that the commission uses, and a page at the UN is roughly the same as a page at the commission. And in editing, it's 13 pages a day. It keeps us busy.
Well, I don't know exactly how many pages we have now in the commission, but I know that the workload is extremely high because many people went, many colleagues went to retirement and were not replaced, and the workload, it's the normal workload plus all the stuff around COVID, which has created a lot of work, additional work. So I know that the colleagues are really suffering.
Well, I mean, we have a similar situation, and I would be surprised if Giuseppe said anything different. But because of COVID, we have been more busy than usual. Plus, we had to switch from almost full-time work at the office to full-time work from home. And we managed to do it and maintain productivity, which is pretty amazing. I hope that that everybody who's expecting this productivity from us is actually noticing that we managed to keep things up.
Yeah, that's curious. I think that everywhere we did it, and the WHO was special in that their increase was even bigger because all the information about COVID was provided by them. But in all organizations that I know, we kept the productivity and we took it up, and we could do it also because we all rely on external support, and it's a kind of buffer. So we didn't get more external support. We had to absorb everything internally. So productivity was quite high.
Yeah, we have the same situation. Yeah. It's been a very difficult year because the work pressure was so high because of the sudden change in situation, and especially colleagues who have small children that couldn't go to school. With both parents working in some cases and living in small apartments, because apartments in New York are small, that was extremely tough for some colleagues, extremely tough.
Well, that's an interesting question. How did it go in the first time? We had some very chaotic weeks in last year in the commission when everybody had to stay home. And the information informatics didn't work as well, of course. It had never happened that we have a long tradition of teleworking, but never everybody worked on teleworking. So it was extremely difficult. How did you manage to send all these people home and then to have a normal service?
Well, we were lucky in a way, because we installed generally teams just at the end of 2019, which means that by the time COVID struck, we were all equipped with teams. Many people had not been using it, but some people had been using it. And the main problem was adapting to working from home, because not everybody was well equipped. IT decided to grant the acquisition of equipment like 6 months down the line, which means that everybody had equipped themselves before. But the first week we had a bit of leeway to go to the offices and take material from there. So some people were taking their laptops, other people were working remotely, connecting to the laptop inside the building. People were taking big screens or were taking keyboards, things like this. But apart from 1 week of a bit of crisis, we set up teams very quickly. We set up regular meetings and we had daily checkups and whether everybody is up and alive, because that was at the time the discussion is, are we sure that everybody is healthy and nobody is suffering? But I think that we went back to full productivity in less than a week, probably.
Oh, that's good. Mm. But then, of course, there's all the other social problems. You don't meet your colleagues anymore, only online, and the important coffee breaks. So, well, we have on this cartoon the picture that the productivity went down when the coffee machine broke. So that's a really important thing. So I'm really missing my colleagues and these accidental random meetings on the corridor and that, everything this. Well, how do you manage to with what are your organizations do to handle with this?
Well, I mean, I don't really experience the things that you mentioned as much of a problem. But first, to go back to what Giuseppe was saying, we had a very smooth transition. We also already had teams installed. I personally happened to have the IT equipment that I needed because I had already prepared before COVID struck, to be able to work from home from time to time. Our IT department made big screens available. We could simply take the screens home that were in our offices. We already had, for the translators, I know we had a CAD tool in place called eLuna, which was developed by our own department. And so they were already fully equipped to work remotely in that sense. All our terminology, databases, and everything are online. It wasn't much of a problem. The only thing in the first few months, I think a lot of people did not have. Some people were working on Mac computers, which was more difficult to work with because our whole environment is set up for Windows. But we managed it. I'm sure it was more difficult for those colleagues, but for me personally, it was a seamless transition, a completely seamless transition. But about your point, Conrad, the social contacts in the office. We held some surrogate social events on Teams. That was actually quite nice, and we had some colleagues who were on the other side of the Atlantic in Europe because they were stuck there at the moment that the pandemic hit, or they went back to their families in Europe. Thanks to this technology, we were all able to sit in on the same meetings and also just have social events. I do think that that these direct personal contacts are important. I just don't think you need them every day. I think I can easily conceive of a working environment in the future, or actually, it's already here, in which we have a hybrid situation. We spend some time in the office and some time at home, but I think that it's probably enough. We used to have away days at the at DGT. I'm sure you remember those, Giuseppe. Those were kind of fun, and if we can continue to have we never have those at the UN headquarters, but maybe I should suggest starting this practice at our office to make up for the relative lack of social contacts. But I would be very much in favor of a hybrid situation where the team comes together only part of the time and the rest of the time we work from home, because I think there is a great advantage, for me personally at least, in not having to commute every day, not having to face the traffic jams, not having to face the crowds in the subway, not having to be in our relatively uncomfortable offices, because New York, the infrastructure in New York is quite outdated, and our offices are small, and many offices don't even have windows.
Oh yes, oh.
I can concur with you. I think that the main problem we'll have now is to convince people to come back. There are some people who wanted to work here because they don't have the conditions, like a noisy neighbor or things like this, but they are very, very strict minority. But now we are talking of coming back to the office, and I see I will have to drag them back on the promise that they will be able to work from home half the time. Mm-hmm. And from time to time, now we are allowing from time to time to work from distant places. So I've had this summer people working from Morocco, from Canada, and places like this, because that's also working from home. That, yes, I think that hybrid is here to stay.
Well, on the question how we can raise productivity without losing quality, the hierarchy in DGT normally has the answers, technology and outsourcing. So my first question is on the technological environment in your respective services compared to DGT. Well, Joseph already told us it was a little bit journey into the past. Well, has it changed, or how does it look like technologically in your service?
When I talked about a journey to the past, it was more about attitudes and culture than technology, because they had the technology at the time. The only thing is, and they had Trados, and they had multi-term, and they had machine translation. The problem is that it was little used, for example. So technology is there, and I think that technology is a way to improve productivity, and I also understand the position of those who say that technology is not everything, that technology has to be controlled by humans. But I think that's the basic thing of technology. If you have heavy machinery, it doesn't work autonomously. You have a human controlling. So with translation, it's the same. You must use it in a judicious way. But I have my people now with MT. They're excited. What they are not excited is with bad MT. But with good MT, they are really excited. And I see that Sigurd confirms.
Yes, in my experience with translation here, we have... I would say we are at a comparable level. Actually, today we are more advanced, I think, than at the UN than we were at the European Commission in 2014, mainly because the quality of machine translation has improved. in the CAT tool, which was developed here, which is web-based. We have machine translation integrated, and I was quite astonished at the quality of those translations, especially from Russian, because from Russian to English, you have to switch around a lot of the word order, and the machine translation did that actually very well. And I did find that it saved time and effort to edit machine translation instead of writing out everything myself. And I was also given an assignment of translating treaties, which is a task here at the United Nations. All international treaties are registered with the Secretariat of the United Nations, and we then have to translate those into English and French. And that's where you get to work on non-UN languages. And I had to work from German. And German is not in the machine translation. And German has the same issue from going from German into English. You have the same issue as with Russian, which is that the word order can be very different. And so there I had to do it myself. And I could really appreciate the difference in effort. So, but I also totally agree with Giuseppe that it is like heavy machinery. You don't operate a piece of heavy machinery without some human supervision. And it's the same here. Now in editing, we're really very far removed from machine editing. Machine translation is fairly advanced, and I could see in at least during my lifetime some very reliable machine translation happening. I would say that in the field of editing, we're much farther behind. I don't know exactly why that is, but editing is a different kind of discipline from translation. I've done both, and in editing, I had to learn new thinking processes almost from scratch. And although the linguistic competence involved in editing is the same as in translation, the processes are quite different. So, and I also think it is more of a niche profession than translation is. So I also think that less effort will be put into coming up with anything like machine editing.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because I think I have the impression that translation generates enormous amounts of money. Now it's in the billions of dollars that it generates in general in the localization world, because people want to sell in many languages and they have to translate, and they need to automate and make translation cheap and reliable. But I don't see this market for editing. Editing is much more niche, as you say, so probably you will be disadvantaged for the rest of your life, probably.
Well, it depends on what you call disadvantaged, because the world of translation is in the middle of an enormous technological and cultural shift. And people outside our profession, as we all know, do not necessarily understand the intellectual effort and knowledge and experience that go into a good translation. And, a lot of people think that you just punch something into Google Translate and there's a result. Why do you need a human translator? It doesn't have to be perfect, does it? Unfortunately, that's what we're up against, and it has created an enormous downward pressure on prices in the world of freelance translation. And I think it is also the driving force behind the emphasis on productivity. which I would be interested to hear, by the way, if that practice has changed at the commission. Maybe Conrad can tell us that. But what happens in our profession at the United Nations, and I assume at the WTO as well, is that pressure is coming from the member states, and it is a reflection of their expectations, which those expectations are formed by the advances in machine translation, and hence the downward pressure on prices on the free market.
Well, that's indeed my next question. What is the staff policy in Geneva or in New York? Outsourcing, hiring, outsource how, and so on, which contracts, and so perhaps Joseph.
I can start talking about this, but that's there are many things involved here. So we on the hiring practices, we are hired by the 2-year contracts, and after 5 years, either you are not renewed anymore or you become permanent. So you are only a permanent staff after 5 years, which I will never be because I will have to retire before reaching my 5 years. And now what we have is a mix of resources in which around half of our production is translated by fixed term, as we call the 2-year contracts, by fixed term or permanent staff, and the rest is translated by other kinds of resources that can be in-house or outside. In-house, we recruit short-term people, short-term staff, which are meant to be short-term, but they change short-term contracts and they can spend many years being short-term. And this is something that can happen in Geneva because we have many international organizations, so they can come for 2 months to WTO and then go for 2 months to WHO and then 3 months in ILO and then to UN and then to YIPO and continue turning around. Some people even go to Paris or to Vienna and they change cities. The other type of resources that we have are the freelancers. And freelancers, we have them in a different model as in Brussels or Luxembourg. Our freelancers, we pay them all the same, and then we choose the ones we like. And then they work from home, but they don't work with their own equipment. Well, they can use their own equipment, but they are connected to our infrastructure, so they work in the same conditions as any other translator, be it short term or fixed term or whatever. So that's the structure that we have for as a mix of resources. Anecdotally, we don't have in WTO translation agencies, but that's something that could be changed in the future. Probably still this year we'll have some companies as well in the mix.
And in New York, more or less the same, or?
Well, Conrad, I have to disappoint you on this question. I'm out of my depth. I'm not really well versed in this in these matters. I do know that we rarely work in editing. We don't really work with freelancers. That has a lot to do, at least not in New York. It is a very specialized type of work, and it takes years to learn all the details. We do work with people who have retired and sometimes come back for short periods during surge periods. And we do sometimes get people from translation and from interpreting on cross assignments. But most of the surge capacity needs are met internally, at least at the moment, and in New York. But I do not really know how these things are structured and what the policies are behind them. I'm sorry.
Well, we are nearly at the end of our edition now. Just some very short few words about quality control, quality framework. What are you doing in Geneva to control quality, to guarantee quality?
Well, I think we're in baby steps there. This is one of the parts of the past that have not reached yet modernity. Let's say the principle we apply is one I knew in DGT when I started, and I started in 88, which is we are the best. We know what quality looks like. We can produce quality. And that was our quality management system. And basically, we were revising. And if you were very good, you were not revised, and that's it. Now, because we want to outsource to companies some kind of very repetitive and low-value documents that where we can live with lower quality levels, we are putting in place a quality framework. Because I would like also that we apply this framework to know which quality levels really our internal staff have and our freelancers have. Because we all have bad days. I have a standard joke that a guy goes to the hairdressers and he says, I want a very difficult thing, very short here, long there, and a kind of bizarre thing here. And the hairdresser says, but this is impossible. I said, no, it's not impossible. It's what you did last time. So you can do it once more. So we all have good days and bad days, and we all produce some things which are not good, and we should know which is our level. So it's good knowing that you are the best, but it's still better if you can apply some kind of processes. But we are in baby steps there. Thank you.